All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new timber tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
Just all around great guy. It's Ben Spagan. Welcome, Ben. Merry Christmas.
Joel, thanks for having me. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, all the merriment and great wishes to you, your loved ones, your friends, your family, and of course, all of your fans, your listeners out there. It's an honor to be with you as always, and great to be joining you this time of the year.
We have a theme today. We're kind of talking about reflecting on Erie and kind of previewing 2024. And it's not like we want to do necessarily a year in review with news, but we do want to kind of pinpoint some highlights, and because I feel like the highlights will dictate where we are in our narrative of our community. But before we jump into all of that, I do want to get a kind of an after action or a recap of the Jefferson Educational Society's Global Summit. I absolutely loved my time. I think I saw 6 or 7 events. You were at all of them, and they were remarkable, Ben. What a great thing for our community.
Yeah, Joel, I appreciate you saying that. It's hard to believe that it's been a month and about a week since we had wound down the summit. We had 14 events, 19 speakers in town. We kicked it off on Monday, October 23rd. And I'll tell you, that was a high point for me. They're all high points. It's like picking a favorite kid, right?
You're right.
But it was a high point for me in the sense that we had Peter Baker, the chief White House correspondent for the New York Times, in that night. And it was a high point because I feel like that really tested me. So Peter and I were in conversation that entire time, and then we took audience questions and worked folks in the crowd into the mix. But it really stretched me because – you know, we were preparing for news of the day leading up until 7:29. And I say that because the event starts at 7:30. You know, Peter and I were in the green room, both on our phones, seeing if a Speaker of the House had been announced yet, because at that point, the country was without a Speaker of the House. We're also seeing if there were any movement in the discussions around the hostages from the crisis in the Gaza Strip with Israel and Hamas and what that means. And so, you know, we acknowledge that in the program of sort of if anything happens while we're on stage here, we can try our best to react to it in real time. But we're going on news of the day up until 7:29. We've checked our phones and now we're on stage. And it was a really, really great conversation. He's just a remarkable person. We got a chance to talk to Peter about his experience flying on Air Force One with President Biden. He went over for that trip to Israel. He was on the plane and flown there and flown back. And, and President Biden, who has not been, would not be known to be media friendly in terms of the amount of interviews he gives, normally doesn't go back to the press pit on the plane to talk to folks, yet he did for this trip. And so we were able to talk about that. So it was really exciting all the way through until our final event, which featured former Congressperson Val Demings, as well as the former head of the RNC, Michael Steele, in conversation, you know, about the future of American politics and the future of the country, what that means, what they're seeing, and a whole range of events in between. But again, just remarkable to see the civic appetite of the Erie community, the intellectual appetite of the Erie community, and the willingness for folks across the political spectrum to sit shoulder to shoulder in the same room, hear from a person, and they might not agree on everything together, the audience, and they might not agree with the speaker, but they can agree to disagree without being disagreeable. And I think that's really one of the hallmark things we've been able to do with all of the programming that we do at the JES, but the Global Summit in particular, to bring people right of center, left of center, farther left, farther right, all into a room in the spirit of we should enter into the room willing to learn and exit the room having learned a little something.
I have to say, I was taken aback by Michael Steele's visceral plea to basically, he was shouting to America about Donald Trump. I mean, I get he's a never Trumper or whatever, but that was not just a run of the mill criticism of the 45th president. He is viscerally against the chance that he would win again. And boy, I'm not sure he's going to get his wish there, Ben. I don't know.
You know, I'm glad that you bring that up, Joel, because I had a number of people ask me beforehand, you know, is Michael Steele still a Republican? And I can't recall whether it was The Hill or The Weekly, what publication it was, but he wrote a really, really thoughtful essay, Why I'm Still a Republican.
Okay.
And so he is. He's still a card-carrying Republican. And so Michael Steele recognizes that the party has drifted in a way that he doesn't recognize, and also sees it as a clear and present threat to democracy. That's something that we heard from several speakers. So it wasn't just Michael Steele. And of course, you know, we don't know the political futures of Michael Steele or Val Demings. One may run for office again, another might. And Michael Steele was the lieutenant governor of Maryland, the first African-American lieutenant governor of Maryland. We don't know their political futures, but I think that, you know, where Val Demings may have been more measured in her responses, you know, Michael was unfiltered. And I think the audience appreciated that, whether or not they were agreeing with his message. But he wasn't alone in that. We heard Tom Nichols, you know, who is also a conservative. He's a contributor to The Atlantic. And, you know, I think he put it aptly, and I'm paraphrasing here because I can't recall his exact exchange, but you know, this is not, in Tom's estimation, not a left versus right. What we're looking at is someone who has their views of how democracy would continue and function in a rational way, and someone who's threatening to tear down the entire system. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the clear and present threat that several folks had identified in former President Trump and candidate Trump now trying to resume office. And you know, we know that the mainstream media is covering it. We're seeing it ad nauseum, but you know, it's not as if he's not putting his playbook in front of us. Karen Tumulty from the Washington Post also addressed that. She was in a panel discussion with Laura Coates of CNN and Erie's own Lisa Adams in conversation with Steve Scully. You know, former President Trump is not being coy about what he would do. And of course, you know, I think that we have developed this callous that we always wonder, like, well, is this just bluster? Is this just words? And we're never really sure how far he's going to go. And I would take it all the way back to his statements as a candidate in 2016. If I could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and no one would care. And we all sort of just shrugged that off. And then we saw the insurrection attempt, right? You know, on January 6th. And you know, we realized that democracy, you know, can be vulnerable. How vulnerable it is today, I'm not sure. But, you know, it's hard to deny the authoritarian rhetoric that we're hearing from former President Trump, you know, how that aligns with other authoritarian leaders globally and what that looks like. And so,
Ben, isn't there, I mean, when you're hearing it from establishment folks like we heard at the JE, at the Global Summit, isn't there a sense that it could be a boy crying wolf? I mean, if you're so overwrought like Michael Steele was that night, I mean, is there could it backfire on you?
So I think you have a good point, Joel, in that if we worry so much about it and we think that it would never happen, you know, perhaps we become immune to thinking it actually would, you know, in terms of what would happen. I can't say, of course, you know, I can't say, you know, what would happen if the former president is reelected. What would he do day one? I don't know. But, you know, I think that when he was running as a candidate in 2016, we had nothing to judge against other than his, you know, dealings as a real estate mogul and his, you know, being a celebrity. That's what we had to judge him against. And now we have 4 years, and we also have 4 years since, you know, and so there's a bit more to think about when it comes to the system. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's one of the things that we had David Urban, who is who worked on the 2016 and the 2020 Trump campaigns to get him elected and reelected, said that there is a preoccupation when it comes to this, you know, I'm again paraphrasing, you know, punish my enemies and, you know, looking back to the past.
I am your retribution.
Right. The Republican Party has to get out of its own way. And the way that he phrased it was too many people are looking in the rearview mirror and are focused on what had happened instead of looking forward. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's part of what Michael Steele hears as well, is that when you get to the bottom of it, we're not hearing a lot of policy solutions, you know, and we're not hearing a lot of policy positions. And I think that's why a lot of the candidates running against, you know, President Trump, you know, for the nomination are struggling, is they're trying to debate policy. And right now, you know, the message is we're going to take it back the way it was. I'm your leader. You know, I can make things right. Only I can do this, et cetera, et cetera, where it's more of a campaign of cult of personality than it is a campaign of policy and solutions. And so it's tough. It's tough to run against that, you know, and there's something magnetic about, you know, the attraction of the personality and the persona that he puts on. So, yeah, I do think that there could be fear that, you know, the boy's crying wolf. But I think that if we hear enough people crying wolf, you know, you've got to wonder, is there one out in the field?
Right. Can you talk about your impression of the fellow from Boston Consulting, Rich Desser, right?
Rich Lesser.
Lesser, excuse me. And talking about AI, he was not, it was not like, you know, the robots are taking over kind of a thing. He was a pretty measured guy on that, but we're all worried that the robots are taking over.
Right.
Shane really is worried. Yeah.
Are they going to take our jobs? You know, and that's a serious question. I know we ask that tongue in cheek. I think of that seriously as a writer myself, and I can plug things into ChatGPT and see how fast it spits things out. And it does amaze me and in both ways, good and bad. So what I appreciated about Rich Lesser, who I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that he's the son of Ed Lesser, who Erieites know so well because of his contributions to local civics through the Council of Governments, years of service there, but also, you know, a wonderful patron of the arts and of music. And also a great Jeffersonian, attended a ton of our programs. And
I couldn't believe that he passed within days of his son coming to Erie. Unbelievable how that happened, you know.
Yeah, we were heartbroken to know that Ed's gone, because, you know, I think our community is a bit less without him. And I think that, you know, that's a call to young leaders to step up and fill the voids left by those who do leave us. But, you know, in a way, I think we can take some sort of solace in knowing that Ed knew that we brought his son to Erie to present at the Global Summit. And his son is, you know, remarkably achieved. He was the president and CEO of Boston Consulting Group for years and is now the global chair. He just got back from COP28. You know, that was his next stop after the Global Summit, was headed over to Dubai to talk about, you know, the energy crisis. But you asked me about AI, and I think that what was helpful from Rich's presentation was thinking about it on an S-curve. And, you know, really when it comes to deep machine learning, we're still toward the base of that, and we still have a ways to go, you know, in terms of where we're headed with AI. But I think it's looking at, you know, no, I don't think tomorrow your toaster is going to come alive and kill you, but I think that it's how we're using AI. And a real example is that there are class action lawsuits against providers for Medicare Advantage plans now, saying that AI software that they used from a third party has been significantly denying claims that should have been approved, you know, and no human interacted with those. And so where that lawsuit will head, I don't know. But I think that's the beginning of what we're starting to see, is the implications of using a tool, and do we fully understand it, and are we fully capable of trusting it in terms of that? And, you know, we, of course, as humans have made great leaps and bounds. You know, we used to, you know, etch on cave walls, and then we etched on papyrus, and then we had movable type. And, you know, then we had, you know, clunky computers we could never leave. And, you know, I'm talking to you from a 13-inch laptop, you know, and we're Zooming in to do this interview. So, of course, there will always be innovation, but I think that it's making sure that we're not getting ahead of it and it's not getting ahead of us. So it was refreshing to hear his concerns, but also, the potential for AI and applications. I think his real concern was over the environment,
right.
In terms of we are marching inevitably closer to that threshold of, we cannot come back from it. And there is no planet B. I know that's a bumper sticker, but it's real. There's nowhere else. We've not figured out how to travel to another planet and habitate there. Can we develop that kind of science before we burn out this planet? I don't know. Should we maybe focus our science efforts on saving the planet that we currently inhabitate? I think so. I think that's a good idea. And I think there are a number of ways that countries can do that individually. Local municipalities can accomplish that, but then collectively, globally, what we can do. So, it'll be interesting to see the action that comes out of the COP28 discussions in terms of how we transition economies, how we move away from fossil fuels and a dependence thereof into greener energies without causing mass economic disruption. Folks that would not be skill ready day one to work in a green industry, but how do we get them there? How do we couple that with technology? So of the concerns, energy and our impacts to the climate seem to be greater than AI at the moment, but stay tuned.
All right, we're talking to Ben Spang. I want to put the Global Summit at a bow. It really was a remarkable 3 weeks for our community. And thanks to Dr. Ferrati and you and the team, Jacob and Raven and, I'm forgetting people. But, just incredible efforts and so great, to have most of those events again and again. What a great context to learn and to connect,
Yeah, thank you, Joel. Too kind. It is a team effort. Our whole entire team does it. It's a team effort from folks at Gannon. What a strong partner there. And two, we've got to acknowledge that, we've not raised ticket prices. We keep them the same. And that's really because, and Ferky said this several times at several events, that people attending are on a 90% scholarship because of the community sponsors. Yeah. And that ranges from LECOM and Erie Insurance to PNC to the Community Foundation, ECRA, all the way down where, every bit helps because we want to make sure that finances are not a barrier of access to global ideas and big thinking. And it's because that over the years that page in our brochure that shows all of the sponsors just continues to grow and grow and grow. It really shows that the community is investing in this. And that soft infrastructure, when it comes to it, it's not hard infrastructure. We're not paving roads, but it's right. Soft infrastructure of civic knowledge and civic engagement and keeping a vibrant culture together is so important to the wellness and health of a community.
We were talking about, I wanted to bring up one more session from the Global Summit, and that was about with the urbanists, Richard Florida, Bruce Katz. Bruce Katz, of course, being highly much the driver of the Erie's Inclusive Playbook, and Richard Florida, the urbanist who really has created modern thought in a lot of ways about how to think about our urban areas and our downtowns. And he had something to say, didn't he, about how his thinking has changed.
Yeah, and then, he teed it up so well, Joel, because there was almost this quiet moment where he leans in and, almost whispers it to the audience. But it was a huge reckoning in that, of course, he's known for his seminal work, Rise of the Creative Class. And that really is where we start getting the phrases live, work, and play. What does it look like, in urban cities? And the creative class being, people that are creators that, move in and habitate, have disposable incomes that can be economic generators. His point to the Erie audience was, after the pandemic and seeing the impact that really attractions should also be in that mix. And that's something that, he had spoken out against before, is don't go all in on, an economy that you're trying to build on quote unquote beer and hot dogs, that kind of thing of like, you can't really build stadium economies. But looking at new data, that's one of the things that's driving the again renaissance of cities. Because of course we're asking the question, what's the future of the American city? And it's the ongoing saga of the rise and fall of the American city. Well, it's really the rise and fall and rise again of the American city, that they rise for different reasons. And we're actually seeing, and there was a study that he cited that came out from City Lab, you know, just a few days after he presented, that showed that on the whole, downtowns are recovered 111%.
Still contributing editor to the Erie Reader, right, Ben? Still making it happen.
I am, and yeah, and Joel, we were just talking about Richard Florida and Bruce Katz's appearance, and you know, fortunately, you know, because still with the Reader, had a chance to immediately follow up on that program for the Erie Reader's Business Quarterly. You know, it's not just an alt-weekly newspaper. There are two different magazines that are going, and I had a chance to reflect on the lessons learned from the two of them, which, you know, it turns out is a lot, you know, and something that Erie should take stock of. And I think that's the value sometimes of bringing outsiders in, having them take a look at it and say, like, wow, this is actually impressive. Because I think sometimes when you're only seeing it from the street view because you see it every day and you're working on it every day, you might think progress drifts slowly or doesn't come fast enough. But when somebody else comes out and says, wow, this is actually something, you know, I think you can puff your chest up a little bit more. You know, you take a little bit more pride in it. And I think that's a helpful momentum builder.
I think it's important to reflect on what Richard Florida and Bruce Katz were talking about when they were talking about Erie's downtown. Because I don't – Richard Florida does not strike me as somebody that wants to tickle your ear. He's kind of a truth teller, maybe brutally sometimes. And that's the emotional vibe I get from him. And they loved Erie.
They really did, you know. And one of the things that he had talked about was, you know, he's written reports where it's tough for communities to swallow him because being tough on them. And you know, an example that we talked about was, you know, Toronto's waterfront, yeah, and how they need to get it right. There's work to be done. And you think of Toronto, like, that's a mega city, right? You know, like, that's huge. But they were fawning over Erie and impressed with what it, you know, what it has accomplished. And for context, you know, Richard hadn't been to Erie in 20-some years. He'd been here before.
Yeah.
He came back and said, it's a whole different Erie, you know, and I think that's important for us to say, and it's important for us to recognize and reflect on and take a step back to say there are things. Look, the JES didn't exist 20 years ago. You know, the Erie Reader didn't exist 20 years ago. You know, there wasn't a vibrancy that, you know, I can see today in the downtown, the, you know, 20 years ago. And I say that as, you know, somebody who arrived in Erie 20 years ago. You know, I came to college to go to, you know, I came to Erie to go to college, you know, and it's different.
I wanted to point out that I snuck into that Metro 100 back in 2017 when they had Buki there, right? And Buki was saying, we need a $600 million investment. And people were like choking on their water bottles because that sounded like a bazillion dollars. I mean, it just, you might as well say Googleplex. But what has happened between 2017 and 2023, it's gone way beyond 600 mil.
Right. I mean, I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, Joel, but, you know, a billion some dollars have been invested in Erie over the past several years in terms of development. And if you look at, you know, speaking of Bruce Katz, if you look at the investment playbook, which is begotten Infinite Erie, there's a billion and some more that, you know, are ready for investment. So not only is Erie making those investments when it was shocked by a number of 600 million, that now it's made more than those investments over time. And there's another series of them ready to be made, you know, and I think that's the call to action, right, is that, you know, keep moving. And I think there's a lot that goes back to that 2017 event, right? You know, like, that was sort of a grab you by the shirt collar and shake you around a little bit, and that's who Buki was, you know. And I think that was necessary for Erie at that time of, you know, get out of your own way, you know, and think bigger, you know, dare to dream larger, dare to dream bigger, try to achieve big things, and it's possible. So, you know, that's what, you know, we're seeing. And back to your point of, like, what Richard Florida was saying in terms of, you know, his bit of a seismic change, is it really attractions, you know, are what are driving people to downtowns. That, you know, nearly two-thirds of visitors in downtowns are going there because there's something to visit. That could be locals, that could be folks from out of town, but, you know, workers are not making up a significant portion of the population, nor are residents. You know, those account for, you know, the 10%, the 20%. You know, they were there, and clearly that matters. But, you know, it's the idea of having attractions, a reason to be, you know, and that was where he even said, you know, if he could rewrite his, you know, Rise of the Creative Class, you know, he'd change the subtitle to include attractions and connections.
Yeah.
City centers as role of connectors, connecting people and connecting people to things. You know, there has to be something to go do. There has to be something to go see. There has to be a place that you want to go get coffee. There has to be a place that you want to go get a craft beer. There has to be a place where you want to see entertainment. Think about how long that the marquee of the Warner Theater went unlighted, and now look at that thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's stunning. Like, that says something about a pride of place, you know, when you finally address that and that's lighted up. And I know that on the grand scale of things, that's probably a smaller thing to point to, but it's really that psyche, you know, and that idea of like what it means to be and what it means to have pride in place, because suddenly you can walk a little taller, stand a little straighter, because things are looking great. Think about all the public art that has been done by Erie Arts and Culture. The electrical boxes, murals, you know, other things to see and stop at and digest, and then places to go into, you know, like the development from the EDDC, the Erie Downtown Development Corporation, you know, like that there's grocery stores downtown, that there are restaurants downtown, you know, and of course those change, and some places make it, some places don't. But the idea that it's not, once it's boarded up and it's gone, last person out, turn the lights off. You know, I think that the mentality has changed. I think that's what's really important. And that phrase, you know, nobody knows its exact origin, but everybody points to Seattle, right? That was Seattle in the 70s. Two guys built, you know, purchased a billboard and wrote last person out, turn the lights off, you know, and that sort of becomes the mentality. And I think that it's important to recognize that sometimes it takes time. You know, it takes a lot of elbow grease, a lot of time, and a lot of smart investment. You know, and Pittsburgh, you know, did not become a darling city overnight. You know, I mean, it bottomed out in the 80s, and it's been on a climb uphill ever since. And look at Pittsburgh now as a destination pointed to.
There's no doubt about it. I want to go to kind of our third point, because we want to stay clear-eyed about where Erie's at and where Erie might be going in 2024. And I want to bring up the concept of leadership, because I kind of started 2023 with this concept of how are we doing with leadership, and again there's a lot of praise to go around, but there's a lot of blame to go around as well, and it is about our individuals and are functioning organizations up to the challenge of what it's going to take to get to the next level with our community. And I've got to say that I feel like the private sector, you know, the those that have got skin in the game, they have their own money. You know, I think about, a guy like Pete Zafras, who said, hey, I'm going to take the old Union Bank and make it into something beautiful. And his, you know, heart, soul, you know, he's done the same thing with the old General Tire. And I mean, it just, you know, he's focused on 12th Street. I think about the fella coming from California, investing $50 million into the Renaissance Center. I think about what's happening, with the EDDC. And those are all private organizations, whether they were the banks or the hospitals or the universities, all coming together saying, we're going to put some money together and attract some money. And we have $100 million in a 4-block footprint. So we've got the private sector going. We got the nonprofit sector going. You know, it's amazing, you know, the kind of leadership coming out of the Erie Community Foundation. They're leading the way on the Infinite Erie. You know, Boo Haggerty and those guys at Hammett Health Foundation. I mean, Highmark is involved too, you know, as a nonprofit. The hospitals are doing their thing. Gannon's doing their thing. Mercyhurst and so on. Then it comes to the public sector, okay? And, again, a lot of praise to go around, but there is some blame to go around. And right now we're in kind of this weird moment where I'm just going to say, this is my editorial comment. This is not Ben's comment. My comment is I feel like we're backsliding as far as bold leadership and concise togetherness on purpose. Ben, am I washed up?
Joel, I would never call you washed up. I would call you many things, and washed up would not be amongst them. So look, you know, when you were saying this, you know, immediately I thought of the, President Kennedy quote, which I will misquote and paraphrase, but it's, you know, success knows a thousand parents, and, you know, defeat is an orphan, you know. So anytime something goes right, we all want to fall in line and take credit for that, no matter how large or small a role might have been. Everybody wants to share in the credit. But if something doesn't go right, or if something, you know, is going sideways, you know, that's when, you know, we can get to finger pointing and blaming. So, look, I think that, you know, I'm also reminded. So I am. My spirit is lifted by all of the things that you rattled off that are working in Erie's favor. And I say that because, you know, there's no everybody that's looking at community economic development dreams of a silver bullet solution. Like, we're going to find that one thing that's going to fix our town. Mm-hmm. There is no silver bullet, you know, and you know, it's just one thing is not going to save it. So also, you know, one thing won't totally wreck it. Now, I mean, it can have an impact. And I think that's where you're talking about the importance of leadership. But, you know, the thing that really lifts my spirits is, you know, back to the Florida Cats conversation. And Florida Cats should be the name of our band when we launch one, Joel, because
there you
I think
go.
It's a great name.
I want to play the tambourine.
Okay, tambourine taken. It's going to be you. But, you know, he talked about necessary assets, you know, okay, to have vibrant downtowns. And I wrote about that in the Erie Reader's Business Magazine, where it was, you know, you need strong employers. Erie's got that check. You know, Erie Insurance is now the line. So, like, look, we're in the information age, and, you know, a tech information company is our largest employer. It's not industrial anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you should have some sort of downtown campus if you're lucky to have that. Erie does have that with Gannon University. You should have local philanthropy that's really empowering civic engagement in a transformational way. The community foundation's doing that under the leadership of Karen Billowith. And then, you know, also have those attractions, which we talked about before. You've got the food hall. You've got the rock climbing wall now, you know, like, and that's like an Olympic
Children's Museum. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, the Children's Museum, right? You know, like, millions of dollars in a renovation there that is just absolutely stunning. So those are important things. So, of course, civic leadership plays a role in that. And I think that, you know, that's part of one of the blessings of, even at the municipal level, we're living in a democracy and a system of checks and balances. They might not always get along. And that's likely a good thing, because, you know, if everybody was headed in one direction and one direction quickly, that sounds like a dictatorship to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and dictatorship's the most effective and efficient form of government until you get a bad dictator, right? You know, like, that's the one thing. So it's good that we have checks and balances. Right now, in this period, I think we're in the micro period, you know, I call it an interregnum, you know, as we finish the end of the year and march toward, because, you know, just yesterday, we know that county council had rejected some of the budget cuts from the county executive. And that's an ongoing conversation now of what is the county budget going to look like? Where can they find compromise? How can they do that? Of course, I think in the spirit of, we all want Erie to succeed and we want our leaders to succeed, we want them to work it out. You know, we shouldn't be rooting for somebody's demise and all of that, or somebody to look like they have egg on their face. You know, hopefully they can get in a room, work it out, you know, and back and forth between drafts, and it'll work, you know. But I think that when it comes to civic leadership, we've seen times when it's been strong, and we've seen times when it's been complicated. In that 2017 event that you mentioned, you know, part of the reason that we had that event was, you know, the Erie Refocus plan came out, and the big question was, what's next? You know, who's going to do it? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And part of the reason that the JES wanted to have that conversation, which there was a day-long session, you know, with stakeholders and leaders, and then a public session that followed. So the public wasn't excluded from that. The public was included and had a chance to weigh in on all of that, hear from Buki himself and Peter Lombardi, one of the other principal architects of the Erie Refocus Plan. And part of it was, who else? You know, what else? Because I can't help but think, we think of how much we hold their feet to the fires when it comes to elected officials. I think of John Dickerson. And I think of John Dickerson, who came to the Global Summit last year, and I think of his book, The Hardest Job in the World. It's about the American presidency, right? Like, we almost expect too much of our elected officials. Like, they can do everything. And then that also leads me to think to, you know, like Norman Mailer in the 60s of, you know, Superman comes to the supermarket. Like, we've glorified elected leaders. Like, they are the ones that have to solve everything. They are an important piece of the equation. But, you know, the other pieces can certainly either make up for that or continue forward as, you know, elected officials work it out. So that we have such unity, strength, and progress in other areas that you've mentioned. You know, I think that gives me more hope. At least I'm a little more optimistic. I hope I'm not looking at this through rose-tinted glasses. Right. But, you know, I really think that there's enough momentum elsewhere. Because when we go back to it, one of the things that Richard Florida didn't rattle off is the assets in a city that's going to help you be vibrant and thrive was elected leaders. I didn't hear that. I might have missed it. I might have missed that.
That's interesting that he didn't talk about so much leadership as much as, you know, just providing context and providing places and that sense of place. I don't want to, again, have this blanket negative look at the public sector, because I see all kinds of very hardworking, very smart, very well-intentioned individuals. We just have all of these little fires that crop up, right? You know, we're having a fire over the library. We're having, you know, we're still having situations where authority heads are either brand new, and so we don't know what they're all about, or they're just kind of reestablishing a silo where we really need. I think Erie is still so vulnerable that silos got to go, and there's got to be this sense of unity and community. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the port, for example. I want to put my hat tip to Tina Mangine, though, and the Redevelopment Authority, because huge impact by the change of leadership there. You know, we have so many great things there.
Right. I mean, and I think that's so I'm glad you brought that up, because I am also reminded of, you know, and I think this came up in one of the programs. There was a national media outlet that sent a reporter to Erie that then was driven around Erie and was told there's nothing happening on 12th Street and it's all doom and gloom and, you know, there's, you know, industry's collapsed, everybody's left, yada, yada, yada. We know that's not the story. And so that just because that aired, I think that got some movement going in Erie of, you know, we need to reclaim our narrative, right? You know, we need to be the ones telling our story, because we knew there's small manufacturers up and down 12th Street. Now you look at, you know, what was the, you know, biggest hulking vacant space, you know, the Redevelopment Authority with Tina Mangine, Ethan Bennett, and others just doing tremendous work on that. And really, including, you know, considering how to incorporate public art into that. So I think that's, you know, a really important thing. I think that, Joel, where I'll go a step farther with you on the journey of, like, how can we improve this? If this is a year of reflection, and what should we expect of 2024? Look, better communication, you know, and I think that's a dialogue between elected officials and the community, because I think the important thing to remember when it comes to authorities, you know, folks are, you know, obviously apply for the job or appointed, you know, when it comes to, you know, for-profit, non-profit, you know, boards might hire, the company might hire, you know, the average resident has little input in that in terms of how could we change the leadership at any one of those institutions. I don't know how we move the needle on that other than, you know, protest signs and pickets and, you know, would that even work? I'm not sure. What I can tell you is elected officials, they have to reapply for their job every 2, 4, 6 years, you know, so, and we elect them, we the people. So, you know, that's the chance to say, do we want more of what they've done? You know, do we think that they can get better? They've got to make the case, you know, and that's what, you know, incumbents have to make the case of, I'm running on a record. What did I do during my time there? And then anybody challenging them, show me that your plan and vision gives me enough trust, hope, and faith that I think you'd do a better job. You know, and so I think that's something to be mindful of, you know, as we continue to approach upcoming elections and think about who do we want actually governing for us and making good decisions. So, you know, one, immediately I'd say, look, better communication. Let's make sure people understand why decisions are being made, what's happening, and a good dialogue between elected officials and the folks that they serve and the folks who elect them, essentially their bosses, you know. But At the county level, you've got some 260,000 bosses, right?
Yes.
You know, like that's our population. So, you know, that's something to be mindful of.
Yeah.
And then it's thinking about, you know, where do you want to go? Because you have a choice in electing that person, essentially employing them into that position. So they are our employees. You know, are we getting the returns out of them that we hope, you know, in terms of, are they a good employee? Are they getting good work done? That's something we've got to ask ourselves. And that's where I think it's a bit different in looking at some of the assets that, you know, Richard Florida had rattled off of, look, Gannon celebrating 100 years, Erie Insurance has been 100 years, you know, Hammett's been there for a very long time, and so on and so forth. Elected officials, yes, you know, City Hall is an institution, it's been there a long time, but you know how many mayors we've seen come and go over time.
Yep.
And now they're term limited, you know, and the same thing goes to the county executives, you know, so elected officials come and go in cycles. And I think that's where, you know, we try to hope that we can help them be the best versions of themselves and lead us into a brighter future. And if they can't and somebody else better comes along, then we vote for them.
30 seconds left with Ben Spagan. Hopes and dreams for 2024 for Erie.
Oh my gosh. So what I would love to see continued movement on Infinite Erie and the playbook. I'd like to see investments continue to come. Joel, you rattled off a lot. I think that that's important. I'd like to see the downtown continuing to grow, you know, in terms of what's happening. But I think affordable housing is really important in that conversation, making sure that, you know, folks are not placed out of the downtown, that they can't access it, that only those of means can. I think that's got to be critical, that we're talking about affordable housing now, not later. It's so much more difficult to solve later than it is now. I'd say the other one, too, that's a big topic is, Joel, we got to be thinking about the airport. We got to be thinking about what we're doing. It was news that we got a third flight, but that third flight goes to the same city that the other two flights went to. And I think that there's clearly room to grow, especially with millions of dollars investment in expanding the runway. And I want to see that continue to I want to see it prosper. I want to see it blossom. And I want to see, you know, Erie is a great option for people to fly in, that we're not experiencing the leakage where people are driving to Buffalo, Cleveland, or Pittsburgh to fly because that's more convenient, that they can fly out of their own backyard. So I think transportation and infrastructure, I want to see that happen.
Ben Spagan, VP of the Jefferson Educational Society.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.